So welcome once again. Tonight we'll be embarking on the Eightfold Path. The Eightfold Path, you'll remember, is the fourth of the Four Noble Truths that Meg spoke of last week. It is the prescription, the Eightfold Path is the prescription for the cessation of suffering. So there are eight path factors, and that's a lot to keep track of. That's a big mouthful. That's a big deal. But not to worry, you don't have to perfect one before we move on to the next one. Although they are generally taught linearly, that's not the way they work. They each support each other. You'll hear about one when we're talking about another. And so you'll get lots of practice as we begin to talk about all eight path factors. It's often said that they're like more like a spiral than a linear line, because they interlock, weave, and support and nourish each other. It's often talked about that there are three categories of path factors. One is the wisdom category that we're going to cover tonight. That includes wise understanding and wise intention. There is the ethics category, and that includes wise speech, wise action, and wise livelihood. And Kevin's going to talk about those next week. And then Meg will wrap it up the following week with the concentration category, which includes wise mindfulness, wise effort, and wise concentration. It is said that none of the path factors can be realized without mindfulness, effort, and concentration. You'll also hear different words, different adjectives for the path factors. We're using wise understanding, but you'll also hear right understanding or skillful understanding. And we chose wise, or actually we chose not to use right, because too often right sounds a little bit like a mandate, and the Buddha was not handing out commands. He always said, don't take my word for it. You try it on and see for yourself. So with this ancient Pali language, it's often difficult to translate words into modern English. So we do the best we can and end up using the one that the translation that works best for you. Sometimes wise understanding, what I'm going to begin talking about tonight, is called wise view. You also have that translated differently. Sometimes there are like a dozen Pali words for one English word. So translations are challenging sometimes, but it winds up being part of the practice. So with wise understanding, what the Buddha wanted us to understand was the Four Noble Truths. In fact, the Four Noble Truths was the Buddha's first talk, and he gave it to the five ascetics that he had been practicing with earlier. And after hearing his talk on the Four Noble Truths, one of those ascetics became awakened. became enlightened. Wise understanding gets us pointed in the right direction. And when you're embarking on a journey, it's really good to have your sights set in on the direction you want to take. And in the beginning, if you just veer off to the side a little bit, it's not that big a deal. But as you go further, you can get yourself way off track. So it's good to start headed in the right direction. The Buddha said, just as the dawn is the forerunner and precursor to the rising sun, so is wise understanding the forerunner and precursor of the breakthrough to the Four Noble Truths. Not understanding leads to more suffering. We all know what suffering is. We all raised our hands last week when Meg asked, you know, that unsatisfactoriness, that too hot, too cold, happiness that doesn't last, pain that we don't want, sickness, aging, death, fear, anger, jealousy, depression, anxiety, greed. Association with the unpleasant is suffering. Separation from the pleasant is suffering. Meg referred to the Four Noble Truths as a medical model last week. Our diagnosis is suffering. The cause of suffering is clinging. And there is a cure or a cessation to suffering. And the prescription is the Eightfold Path. The Buddha said it is the five aggregates of clinging that cause suffering. And once we recognize them, we can let go of them. So on this first step of the path, let's begin here. Wise understanding of this truth of clinging will get us closer to freedom and away from suffering. So the aggregates are literally translated into heaps, as heaps. These five piles that make up what we refer to as the self. They are form or material object, our bodies, feeling tones, that initial quality of our experience, perception, our concepts and ideas, mental formations, our thoughts and emotions, and consciousness. So how is it that they cause us suffering? It's because they are always changing. If we identify strongly with a body that is strong and fit and in shape on one day, and the next day we become ill, we will suffer grief on top of our illness. We almost can't help but identify with our bodies. This is me. This is my face. This is what I look like. Or our sensations, what we're feeling, our perceptions and ideas that come from a lifetime of growing up and experiencing life, our thoughts and emotions. But the more we cling to our bodies, just the way they are, right here, right now, the more pain we subject ourselves to, because the aggregates are always in a state of flux, all five of them. There is no reliable resting place for the mind, it cannot rest easy. So for example, let's say that we're attached to looking and feeling young. That is a common concern in our Western culture, and many industries rely on it. How are we going to feel when our body ages? The definition of suffering I like the most is from Byron Katie, who says, suffering is arguing with what is. So wishing for eternal youth is arguing with the truth of aging. And aging is not a hidden truth, and yet we cling to youth so strongly. We are beginning to touch into a very Buddhist topic here of not self. Why is a robust ego so detrimental to wise understanding? It's because we spend so much time and energy defending it, building it up, supporting it, gratifying it, and it isn't even really here. Because it's always changing and unreliable and inconstant. I did this exercise one time to try to get more in touch with not self. I drew a circle on a piece of paper for my head and a bigger circle for my body. I'm not an artist. And little sausage shapes for my legs and my arms. And all around this figure, I wrote in pencil the roles of my life. Mother, daughter, sister, wife, meditator, athlete, yoga, and volunteer. I wrote all these roles in my life around this image of my body. And as I looked at that, the words around the outside of my body looked a lot like chain links to me. And so I decided to erase a couple of them and see what happened. And that let some space in, some air around my body. And I thought that felt pretty good. It felt a little freeing. And so I erased them all and felt even better. It really sent a message to me that those roles can feel quite confining. And in fact, they are all the time changing too. Like the role of a mother, of a newborn, that the minute you get used to one stage, you're on to the next. Never mind the difference between being the mother of a 2-year-old and the mother of a 33-year-old. Very different. And so I realized that by loosening my grip around who it is I think I am affords me a lot more room, a lot more possibility and flexibility. So continually identifying with what arises also strengthens ego. Like say you just bought a new car or got a new job or got my feelings hurt or my flight got canceled. Identifying with my illness. Once we identify with what arises, this strengthens wrong understanding or unwise understanding by making personal that which is not personal. Instead, see happiness arising and enjoy it while it's here. because it's temporary. The five aggregates constitute that which we claim as self. The more we cling to what we cannot rest in, because it is constantly changing, the more we suffer. Even in the face of something so obvious as the truth of change or impermanence, the habit of clinging is so strong. We need constant reminding. So I wanted to take 5 minutes now to practice the changes that happen from moment to moment. So just sitting. And while we know that this is going to be a short amount of time, really setting the intention to apply effort and mindfulness to sensations in the body or thoughts or emotions that might rise up, and watch their impermanent nature. The breath is also an acceptable focus. So just for a few minutes here. Noticing whatever arises, how it changes and moves, and eventually passes away. So the more we notice the changing nature of our experience, the less we cling to them as I, me, or mine, the less we suffer. The Buddha said that there were two conditions that promote wise understanding. One is the voice of another, like the voice of the Buddha or a teacher, and the other is wise attention. So I'm going to move from wise understanding to wise intention. It is good to reflect on your intention for following the path. It's good to know why you're doing it. Knowing why you're on this journey. And I agree. 5 years ago, I took I walked the El Camino de Santiago in Spain, a 500-mile trek that took 7 weeks. And I thought I was just going because I was invited, and it was going to be a grand adventure. But John Brierley wrote a guide to the Camino, and it's an excellent guidebook. And in the beginning, he suggests that we set an intention for this journey, this epic trip. And once I sat with that for a while, I realized that one of my favorite Buddhist topics is Maranasati, that is the mindfulness of death. Not because it's morbid, but because I want to see life or death as more a part of life than as the end of it. And I don't want to fear my death. It's going to happen. I want to be more comfortable with it. And I find that it does help me to recognize the preciousness in life. And I figured that being gone for 7 weeks, being in another country and away from my family, and especially my daughter, who I'm very close to, was going to be like a dress rehearsal for going away, for dying. And I was glad that I discovered this intention, because what I realized in the trip was that she is going to be just fine. And so am I. It was an epic trip, and it's wise to set an intention for a big trip like that. The Buddha recommends three. One is renunciation, one is metta, or loving kindness, and one is compassion. So renunciation is kind of a charged word, giving up what we love. But it's really giving up what no longer serves us, what leads to suffering. It means that if you're going to embark on this path, it's wise to travel lightly, no attachments. Understanding that the thought of giving up sense pleasures is a downer, I think it's more having a handle on sense pleasures. We just learned that they don't last. Not letting them rule our lives. The Buddha also realized that the idea of giving up or limiting sense pleasures was disagreeable, until he decided to try on renunciation and discovered that by not constantly seeking sense pleasures, that actually left him feeling quite pleasant and liberated. If thoughts are occupied or obsessed with wanting, we suffer. Both of these path factors teach us that resting in that which is inconstant leads to suffering. What is constant? What is happening now? Metta, probably many of you have heard of. It's another tricky Pali word to translate into English, but is most commonly translated as loving kindness. But I'd also like to suggest kind friendliness, or well wishing, or goodwill. Metta is a beautiful quality that we all have the capability for. It just needs to be cultivated. It's a universal quality that we practice offering out to all beings, including ourselves. It's challenging. It takes patience and perseverance and practice. Setting the intention to get to this place, to practice metta in order to be able to offer it out to all. It's okay if you feel like you can't do that now. Metta is a very important Buddhist concept and practice of wishing goodwill to all beings that allows the heart and the mind peace and ease. Compassion is the third intention recommended by the Buddha because it's very difficult to be on this path with hostility in the heart. Compassion is the strong wish to relieve the suffering of all others. It is another big Buddhist foundation. All Buddhist practice generates compassion. As we turn attention inward, we recognize a similarity with those around us. I wish to know happiness, and so do all of you. Everyone else is subject to fear, anxiety, sadness, and joy, just like me. So setting our intention for embarking on the path fits nicely with wise understanding. As we begin to unravel the sense of a fixed self, and that supports finding connection to all others. With practice, imaginary differences between self and other dissolve. This is an example of the path factors working together. And I wanted to close with these four immeasurables, and may they become as natural as your own heartbeat. May all sentient beings know happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings know joy and the causes of joy. And may all sentient beings remain in great equanimity, free from attachment and aversion. I wish for you the same things I wish for myself. So thank you for your kind attention. And let's just sit for a moment and let all those words sink in.